You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Do you stand to live righteously?
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, and coming up in the second and third block, we'll be talking with Lisa, who is the beginning organizer lady, the creator of Feminist Mormon Housewives. I might have already offended her just in that introduction.
Yeah.
You know, by calling her a lady, or by calling her the creator or whatever. Her name is Lisa. She's awesome. So make sure you listen to the second and third block. If you've never been to FeministMormonHousewives.org, check that out.
That's great blog.
That is the site we'll be talking about. You can hear all sorts of, or read all sorts of different blogs from people on all various parts of
lots of
feminism.
Different bloggers too. So
yeah, good. Huge community.
Yeah.
In fact, some might say that the Cultural Hall patterned a little bit after Feminist Mormon Housewives.
Really?
Yeah. In creating a community. Originally, the Cultural Hall, this what you're listening to, just was myself and another person, and then we decided, you know what? There's more than just the two of our points of view.
Right.
So we expanded. That's how you came in,
yes.
Ashley Garvey Smith, to be a part of the Cultural Hall. And now I always like to kind of tout that we have a staff of like 11 people.
Yeah, we've got Brother Kyle.
And Rob, who would be the first to tell you that he's a DJ, Life of the Party.
Life of the Party.
Utah.com. and then Katie, who she's just a blog writer for, I shouldn't say just a blog writer. She does a great job.
She's a fantastic writer.
Molly Mormon, who chimes in with us. John, maybe, who tags in some stuff every now and again.
Yeah.
Britt, my buddy Britt, who writes some stuff.
And he's hilarious.
Brittany, who joins us here in the Cultural Hall every once in a while. Who are we forgetting?
Bree.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she joins us here on the podcast part of it. So thank you to all of them, of course, for all that we've been doing and do. See what I did?
Yeah.
But I want to just weigh in on this real quick because it seems to be the time and season of Mother's Day.
Okay.
I want to throw this out there. I think dudes get screwed in the church. As far as Mother's Day goes.
Oh my goodness. See, well, and you're talking about this on the wrong podcast,
right?
Because we're about ready to talk to a feminist.
Right.
But I will tell you that mothers do not like it at the end of the Mother's Day sacrament meeting program when the bishop's like, every mother or someone who is going to be a mother, or if you want to be a mother someday, but you don't want to be a mother in this life. Like,
right.
Everyone stand up while we all give you flowers.
Yeah, flowers or a nice CD or like a scripture cover. You know what?
The women don't like it. I would say the majority. I know there are some that do. But the majority of women, it makes them feel uncomfortable because there was a time where I was a widow and it was the most uncomfortable thing for me because I'm like, I'm not going to stand up. Like, I feel super weird. You know, I wasn't even married. My husband had just passed away and they're like, stand up. Let me give you.
Here, come on.
It just feels so awkward. So you're saying that the dudes get screwed.
Yeah, because you know what I got last year for Father's Day? My first Father's Day being a married guy.
What's that?
I got a can of A&W root beer.
That was
what I got.
That is delicious.
Here you go.
Root beer.
Yes, it is. But it's not we appreciate you. This is one of a 12 pack.
Some
here.
Would argue, and I'm not arguing this at all, but some would argue that, oh well, but mothers stay at home with the kids all day and they do this and that and they just deserve one day where it's all just focused on them, where they don't have to clean, they don't have to cook, and they get special gifts from their kids and their husbands. And I think Father's Day should be the same thing. I don't think that guys should feel like Father's Day. I don't feel like they think that they get screwed on Father's Day.
I'm screaming for equality, and I think this is the perfect podcast to share this on.
Well, I think that's great. Then wives, get on it and make sure your husbands get what they want for Father's Day.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
That's from Richie. Well, yeah. I'm just his.
That's Richie
right
at theculturalhall.com. R-I-C-H-I-E. Coming up in the second and third block, I visit with Lisa Butterworth, who is the originator of FeministMormonHousewives.org. It's coming back in the second and third block.
Thanksgiving Point presents Follow His Light to celebrate their newest garden exhibit, Light of the World. Open Friday, May 11th through Saturday, June 16th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. with special activities on Mother's Day. More information at thanksgivingpoint.org.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
That's right. It is the second block of the Cultural Hall, and joining me here in my kitchen, so we can call that an addition, an addendum to the Cultural Hall, is Lisa Butterworth, who is the creator. Is it fair to say that you are the creator of FeministMormonHousewives.org?
That is correct. Some people call me the tyrant as well, or supreme goddess.
Yeah. And so, let's start there. How did Feminist Mormon Housewives come about?
Well, it was just, before the second, election of George W. Bush. And I was having a very hard emotional time with that because, you know, I had discovered a while back that I wasn't actually a conservative Republican, but all of my friends and family were, mm-hmm. and, my husband's kind of apolitical. And so, I'm not apolitical, but he was like, getting, I think, a little bit tired of me ranting about George W. Bush. And I didn't have anybody else to talk to. And I found, you know, I found that I was like looking for a community of people that I could talk to. And I went out and I found that I you know, in Boise, Idaho, it wasn't easy to find people. And I also found that I didn't identify with just like normal liberals or Democrats, because mm-hmm. I had this whole other Mormon thing going on that really informed the way I thought about my liberal Democratness.
Sure.
And so I just didn't really connect to that. And I was just like, there has to be some liberal Mormons somewhere that I could talk to. And and I just went looking on the internet, and I found a lot of
Google Mormon liberal. Is that
yes? That is what I did, and you know, I did find at that time, that was like 8 years ago.
Okay, so we're looking at 2004. Just trying to get a time frame here.
Yeah. So there, most of the stuff on the internet about Mormons was like, you know, exmormon.org and
sure, we hate Mormons. Join us. Give us your money. Here's pictures of people in their garments.
Yes. And I was not interested in that, although, you know, there were things that I found you know, interesting factually, but I didn't really trust all of it, you know, like it was just one of those things where I thought, well, some of this is probably true, but some of it probably isn't, and I wasn't really interested in that anyway, and the tone of it was just so angry, and that wasn't where I was or what I wanted. And then I stumbled across the Times and Seasons, which at the time was by far the biggest Mormon blog, and blogging was just starting to be a thing. Mm-hmm. Like blogging was in the news. It was like the new fancy thing.
This new blogging thing, we'll speak about it in the next break here at 10.
Yeah. And so blogging was just a baby. Blogging was like a baby thing out there. And so there was actually a post about liberal Mormons on Times and Seasons, and that's how Google found it for me. Hmm.
What was the article about?
Well, it was by Nate Oman, who is a longtime Loggernackle blogger. And it was actually about how annoying liberal Mormons can be when they like walk into church and are all like, if you knew what I knew, it would blow your mind. And, you know, and you're like, I totally know that. And my mind is not blown. So whatever, you know. And it was, you know.
Don't you love that, though? I mean, yes. There really is that attitude from some people where you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Bow down to you. Thanks.
Because you know so much. Well, and I, you know, you still do get it from people. And, you know, at the time, it wasn't like I was the most informed Mormon ever. And even now, I'm not the most informed Mormon ever. But after 8 years of doing this, you know, I know a lot of these people that have written these things that you know, like, and so you get to a point where you're like, oh, chill. Yeah,
just relax.
Just chill. It's okay. But anyway, So
you found that blog, Times and Seasons. Sorry,
but But the thing that I liked about it that really made my heart sing, and I just was like, woo, it was their commenting policies had this thing where it said, you know, this is a place for faithful members or people who can respect that faith. You know, so you can be here even if you don't believe, but you just can't tell us we're stupid for believing.
Yeah,
and I was like,
exactly. Well, I've actually got it pulled up to read from it exactly.
Yeah.
It says, as a general matter, and this is quoting from the Times and Seasons, but this is actually at feministmormonhousewives.org. It says, as a general matter, it's a form for believing members or for others who are willing to respect members' beliefs. Commenters do not need to believe in the church, but comments that suggest that all believers are per se unintelligent or uninformed are not welcome.
Right. And then the next one also made me so happy, because this is what the fear was of talking to anybody at church, which is,
on the flip side, it is also unacceptable to call into question a commenter's personal righteousness.
Because anytime you bring up, oh, well, I maybe like, you know, Al Gore a little bit, people mm-hmm. would say, well, then you must be bad.
Yeah.
You know, and so,
drinking at home, huh, pal? Okay.
Yeah, you must want to go home and drink a beer and take away our guns if you like Al Gore. And so, it was Al Gore running against Bush back then, right?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Sure.
Was it?
It was.
Or Kerry.
Could've
Gore
been.
Was the first. I don't know. Okay. That was way too long ago. I can't remember things like that.
That's not today. We're living in the present and the future.
Ancient history. So anyway.
But it was Al Gore, and then it was John Kerry.
Right. So Kerry that time. Kerry. It wasn't that I really liked Kerry, but you know, anything but Bush.
Yeah. An attitude of a few people.
Yes. Yes. Which I think is what people are feeling now. Anything but Romney, but.
Oh,
you know.
See how it is. That's President Romney here in the Cultural Hall.
Right, right. So anyway, I loved that, and it made me really happy, and they had a lot of really interesting conversations, and they kept to that. They really did. Like, you could say whatever you wanted to say, and it didn't make you bad. And you could, you know, you could have different opinions, and it continually blew my mind. There were so many interesting ways, you know, like they started having conversations about abortion and gay marriage, and there were these people that were approaching it in ways that I had never even considered.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, dude, I didn't even know you could think about it that way, and it made me so happy that there were just like thoughts that I could like grab onto and munch and chew. And but the problem was is that while this was very fun and everything, I had this whole brain full of just like my brain was just stuffed with all these things I wanted to say, and most of them had to do with women's issues.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the bloggers on Times and Seasons were men, and so like I would be sitting there every day, and I got completely addicted, and I was just like waiting every day for the topic to come up that I wanted to come up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk about all these meaty feminist issues. And they didn't come up, and they didn't come up, and they didn't come up. And so, you know, I started casting a wider net and thinking, that must be out here. There must be something. Where is it? And it appeared that it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, well, you know, there are a few interesting women over on Times and Season. If I start this little blog over here, I can just like vomit out. And that's what I always called it, my brain vomit. I can just vomit out all this stuff that is like choking me, that is like killing me. And then, you know, like, a few people will come over and we'll discuss it, and then I'll get it out and I'll get it out of my system and I'll move on. You know, like that was the thought. Like,
yeah. What specifically, what was like one thing at the time that you found Times and Seasons that you're like, this is, I'm going to vomit this out. What is it? What was the thing? One thing.
One of the things I really wanted to discuss was abortion, because I was really having this like hard time deciding, because, you know, like as a Mormon woman, I do think that life is sacred. But then I also, you know, just am, my mind is blown by the thought of a woman being told what to do by a bunch of men, white men in a coat down at the state house, you know,
mm-hmm.
like with her body and with her choices and with, you know, like all these hard, hard decisions that lead up to abortion that have, you know, like so many layers that, you know, that they just cannot be legislated.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I had these two very heavy things.
And almost it seems to be contradictory.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It is absolutely contradictory.
Yeah.
It's these two totally very weighty ideas. And I felt like both sides told me I had to pick one or the other.
Right.
Like I had to pick a baby's rights or I had to pick a woman's rights. And there was no place in the middle to care about both. And that was just something I really wanted to talk about with people that were intelligent and had thought about it before me and that didn't have these really like bifurcated views about it that could talk about the nuance and look at like how can you think about this in ways that aren't in the political mind right now, like
mm-hmm.
someplace in the middle where you can care about both deeply. And and that was a big one that was on my mind. And there was also just, you know, polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
not a fan, huh?
Well,
or a huge fan, and you wanted to find other people that were huge fans.
Well, that does happen. No. I'm not a big fan. So I just and just someone to talk about it with and work through it with, and you know, just the position of women in the church and the absence of Heavenly Mother, and you know, all of these things, mm-hmm. you know, so many issues that were just building up, and honestly, I didn't even talk about them for quite a long time. The ones that were heaviest, I did all the little ones first. Like I did all because I was scared.
Sure, you didn't know, and you probably didn't know where it was going to go, or even how to do it. Do you remember what your first one was?
Yeah, it was just about VeggieTales because I was a
sure that is significantly lighter than abortion or
right,
polygamy.
Right.
You're right,
right.
VeggieTales.
Well, I'd just been watching VeggieTales. I had the little ones at the time. They're all older now, but at the time I had all these babies, and I'd been watching a lot of VeggieTales. And I noticed that all of the characters were men or women who were like always needing the men to correct them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there, like even like characters that in real life would probably be a woman, like the wise school teacher mm-hmm. was a man. You know, like in real life, the wise elementary school teacher, 99 times out of 100 is going to be a woman. But mm-hmm. in VeggieTales, it was a man, you know, and I'm like, ugh. And even Esther, the story of Esther turned into this, you know, thing that was really more about Mordecai, the wise uncle, telling Esther what to do. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, ugh, really?
Come on, strong woman character.
Yeah, come on, VeggieTales, give us some meat for these girls. But there wasn't anything. And so I was just like, well, that's a nice, safe topic to start out on. Yeah. And so I wrote that up and people came, and then it just got way bigger, way faster. I was thinking this would be like a little project to get my mind vomit out. And then a few people would come, and, you know, I was hoping it would be some smart people that could help me. And then it just like it grew exponentially. Like I was just flabbergasted. And I'd actually started it with my niece-in-law. Because she was really the only Democrat Mormon woman that I knew.
Mm-hmm. A Democrat, a Mormon, and a woman? Hold on.
No, it's true. Yep. And she's actually very, very smart. But she, you know, she has a life. She was really busy. So she did a few posts, and she just wasn't that into it. But I found that a lot of the people that showed up were very smart and very wise. And so I was like, okay, I can't do this by myself. At least not at this rate, because, you know, at some point you run out of mind.
Sure.
You really do. And so, you know, people would show up and they'd be so passionate and interesting and balanced. And I thought, oh, yes, this would make a good blog. So I invited people to join me. And over the years, that is one thing I have to say that I'm pretty proud of, is I've been very wise in picking the people that I blog with. They're very smart, interesting, intelligent, balanced women that are very powerful. And so...
So let's go back then a little bit, because I mean some listening may be, well, how was she raised? You know, were you raised in a very woman strong household, or tell us a little bit about, you know?
Right. Yeah. I grew up in Castledale, Utah, in small town.
Sure.
Nobody knows where that is, and it's very, very Mormon.
Emory County, right?
Emory. Yeah. Go Spartans.
Yeah.
So it's a very traditional small town Mormon community, which I have to say I have learned is not very much like the Wasatch Front Utah community. I mean, there's a lot of the like sort of Mormon humor about some of our quirks sometimes mm-hmm. passes me by, because small town Mormons don't have some of those same quirks.
Like what?
Well, you know, that whole Seriously So Blessed blog that was big
mm-hmm.
And where it makes fun of sort of like the mall shopping. I don't know, like that just wasn't a part of my Mormoniness. Hmm. Like that sort of like superficial, sort of all about how we look and, you know, this sort of outward appearance thing. It just wasn't a part of my world. People in Emory County are for the most part pretty poor, you know, and nobody has designer clothes. Nobody has nice cars. Nobody has fancy houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just doesn't exist there. And so my Mormon upbringing was a very small town, humble farmers and coal miners kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that was my upbringing. And I lived there my whole life in the same house. I'm the youngest of eight.
There you go.
Five brothers and two sisters. And my parents are very, very good Mormons with pioneer stock going all the way back, pushing hand carts across the plains. Very devoted. You know, we went to church every week, even when we were on vacation.
Sure.
And we
Did you go to the full thing on vacation? We've talked about that before. Did you just hit sacrament and then bounce out?
You know, it seems like when I was a kid, it was more the full thing, but we sort of relaxed a little bit as I got older. That, you know, like once most of the kids were out of the house, we sort of chilled just a smidge.
Just yeah. sacrament.
Yeah. Just yeah. maybe sacrament when we're not at home, you know.
Yeah.
And we did family home evening and we did early morning scripture study and we did seminary and I loved it. I loved all of it. Mm-hmm. I just loved my Mormon identity. I loved church. I participated in all the extras. You know, I was in the state choir and I was, you know, like I was a good Mormon girl and I loved all of it. Mm-hmm. I loved Young Women's. I loved my ward. I loved the people of my ward. Like I have nothing bad to say about my Mormon upbringing at all. Just loved all of it.
So where'd you get crazy then?
I know, right? I don't know. My parents did everything right. And my parents are the best parents. Like we, my brothers and sisters and I can argue about everything in the world. But the one thing, if we sit down and say, you know, we had good parents, we all agree 100%. We won the parent lottery. There's, you know, like I have a ridiculously perfect life, honestly, if you look at it. It's so where my feminism came from. My mother was the one thing, I guess, is she wasn't like a stereotypical Mormon woman. She was very outspoken. She was sometimes a little bit tactless in a wonderful way. And she knew what she wanted. And she, you know, went out and got it. She finished her her teaching degree while I was a child and went back to work. And she just was very intelligent and loved politics and got involved in, you know, the county Republican. And I went along with her because I loved Republicans too.
Sure.
So, you know, she was very powerful and very strong and very interesting. And to this day, I love going to church with her because she's not one of these people that sits back and like lets anything go by. Like if she doesn't agree, dude, you will hear about it, you know, like, and she's completely confident in her, you know, in her value and her voice in the, in that setting, you know? And so that I think is very different from what a lot of girls saw in their mothers.
How was dad with that?
My dad was just a very quiet, kind, gentle, loving, and it was always kind of a joke, like, you know, mom runs this house, but
mom wears the pants, dad just as quiet, whatever you want, sweetie.
Yeah, except for that the reality of it wasn't really that way. Like, my mother was very opinionated and loud, but I think my dad got his way more often just because he was stubborn, you know, like he would say, well, this is how it's going to be. And she would, you know, and so like really in the end, like when it came to big decisions, probably he was the one in the end making those decisions. So it really was still a patriarchy, but it wasn't like he didn't know what my mom wanted. And he probably wouldn't have like really gone against something that she felt strongly about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the big decision, she did defer to him, unless, you know, he was truly wrong, I'm sure. But, you know, and so, and to this day, I'm sure she would say that she respected his right to, you know, lead the family and to preside. And, you know, he asked us to pray. You know, he was the one that opened up family home evening, made a lot of the decisions about when we would have family meetings and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I feel like they had a pretty, you know, a pretty even, equal partnership within the paradigm, the Mormon paradigm of the father presiding.
So do you feel like then it may be coming from the view of a feminist at this point, do you feel like that's how it shouldn't have been? That it should have been a different way?
I don't think that you can really say how things should be so much because, you know, we all come at life from our own historical perspective. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we just have to make the best of the history that we're living, you know, and that's the history that they were living. And I think they did make the best of it. They lived beautiful, wonderful, faithful Mormon lives within the paradigm that they were given.
All right. So coming back in the third block, we're going to talk about what it is like then to be a feminist. I'm sure that people know about you being a feminist. I'm sure that that's something that either you let people know or that they certainly find out about. I want to talk about what that is like being a feminist in the church today. I want to talk more about FeministMormonHousewives.org, and we'll come back and do that in the third block.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
Back in the third block here of the Cultural Hall, and I just want to get to it. Stigma of a feminist is that, don't hold the door for me. I can do it myself. No man is going to tell me what to do. You know, all these very strong, very... In some cases, I think when I hear feminists, I feel like I don't know what to do. You know, it's like you're a feminist. Okay, here's the door. I mean, you can get the door. I mean... I'm going to go home teaching. You could come home teaching if you wanted, because, I mean, it's not priesthood. I mean, you could, you know, they used to be able to do temple rituals. Women did. I'm sorry, you're a feminist. Hi. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I know that's kind of a random thing, but talk about what you feel like it means to be a feminist.
That's funny, because one of our taglines on the blog, we used to have a rotating tagline, was provoking your sexist angst since 2004. So we do that. Yeah, we provoke your sexist angst. Sexism is uncomfortable.
Sure.
Because it's so ingrained and it's so in everything that even for feminists, it can be tiring to look at it all the time, because it really literally is everywhere and in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I guess you just have to get to a point where you decide, and the other thing is, it's just like any convert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, newly converted feminists might be uptight about everything.
Sure.
Because they are just discovering everything. Like they feel like they've lived their whole life and they've been blind. And I actually have a friend who's going through this right now. She mm-hmm. went to the Muppet movie and she's like, the Muppet movie is sexist. She's like, this stinks.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm like, yeah, it stinks. I'm sorry. Feminism ruins everything. And so absolutely, like, it's, you know, and so when you find those women who are sort of in this space, this convert space, it can be very difficult for them to sort of like express to you some of the problems without scaring you.
Right.
You know,
because I feel like I'm a pretty open-minded guy. I feel mm-hmm. like I try not to judge, but there have been people who I've met who I deem to be feminists. If not, I'm not sure what they were necessarily proclaiming, but I just felt uncomfortable where it was like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything that you're telling me, and I'm trying to be aware and I'm trying to notice the way that I state things and do things, but you know, it seems really zealotous.
It's a liberal problem in general. I mean, I've felt that way in crowds of black people. I don't know if you've ever,
sure.
right? Like sure. we walk in and we're instantly full of white guilt. We're like, oh wait, what, should I have said that? No. Oh wait, is that racist? Ah, you know, and it just takes a while for both sides to get used to talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it takes people who are encountering angry feminists. And really, for the most part, I would say 95% of feminists aren't angry feminists. Like every group of people has their section of angry people that make everybody uncomfortable,
sure.
you know, like,
you're angry homosexuals, you know, it's, oh, you hate everything about us. And I don't think that that's the feeling of every
right.
homosexual person.
Right. And there are angry white people. I mean, there are. They're
me.
Angry. Right.
I'm so mad.
Right.
And look at me. I am pissed. That is how mad I am right now. And I don't even know why. I just, because
right.
I'm white, I'm
yeah.
mad.
Right. Exactly. Reverse racism or
right?
whatever. So, you know, every contingent is going to have that. And sometimes it's just the zeal of the convert. And sometimes it's just how painful it is for people to like suddenly realize that the whole world is sort of turning on its head. And, you know, I think as with everything, you just have to try for moderation. You know, you have to find the space in the middle where you can be true to who you are, but at the same time, speak your truth in a way that doesn't scare everybody.
Sure.
You know,
because when people are scared, I don't think that anyone ever learns anything. I don't think anything progresses. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing like they always talk about when people are serving missions or when you're trying to teach the gospel. If there's an argument, guess what is not going to happen? Any sort of the spirit going, oh yeah, maybe they do have a point. It's no, I've got a point and I'm going to tell you my point and you'll hear my point. And the other side doing the exact same thing.
Right. Yeah. Nobody's listening. And so, you know, you just have to approach it in a... I like the there's a whole model of rhetoric called traditional rhetoric versus invitational rhetoric.
Okay.
And traditional rhetoric is a very Mormon model where you have somebody who's an expert and they're telling you what you should think. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, they set themselves up as the, you know, this is the right way to do things and learn from me.
Mm-hmm.
And feminism is supposed to be, I think, about more of a you know, invitational rhetoric where I say, this is my experience. This is my truth. This is how I feel about it. Tell me mm-hmm. your truth. Tell mm-hmm. me how you feel about it. Tell me your experiences. Where it's not, I'm going to teach you something. It's, I would like to learn from you. And you mm-hmm. and would you like to learn from me? And let's listen to each other. And let's hear each other's truths. Rather than, let me teach you what feminism is about. Mm-hmm. Let me teach you, you know,
I'll
the right way.
I'll be the one
way.
To show you. Exactly.
Right, right. Because it doesn't work anyway. And, you know, all of that anger doesn't teach anybody anything, but telling people your truth, like, you know, my daughters, both of them independently of each other, as they have aged, have come to me and said, Mom, why do only boys pass the sacrament? Like, in very hurt. And that is the truth. They're just little girls.
Sure.
And that is heartbreaking that I have to, and what do you even say? How do you?
I was going to ask you, what do you say? What did you say?
You know, I just said, well, we have an old church and it has lots of old traditions and it takes a long time sometimes for those traditions to change. And sometimes those things aren't there. And, you know, I hope that someday, you know, that things will be made fair so that everybody gets to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And just try and emphasize that there are a lot of beautiful things about the gospel and there are a lot of beautiful things about the culture, and that sometimes, you know, it isn't that you have to ignore the things that are unfair, but, you know, sometimes things just are. And that's a really unsatisfying answer for an 8-year-old.
Sure. But why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it just seems like grown-ups should be able to fix that.
Right.
And, you know, that... You know, approach that story, I think, telling the truth as I live it, I think is far more powerful than, you know, like, than trying to say, it's not fair. But, you know, just sit in my daughter's shoes and mm-hmm. my shoes. I remember watching those boys pass the sacrament and just admiring them, you know, like just thinking that that was the coolest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what did it do to me that I knew that that was never a possibility for me? Like what avenues of my life have I not explored? Because I knew that there was this whole part of the world that was never open to me. You know, what part of my spirituality, what parts of my leadership skills, you know, what things have I given up my whole life? And I don't even know all of them, but you know, I think about my daughters and I'm like, I don't want that for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want them to limit themselves. I don't want them to get that message over and over and over again until they don't even think about it anymore and they just accept that, you know, there are all these avenues that are never open to you. Don't even consider them.
Do you think, though, that it has to be that everyone has the right to do everything in order for it to be fair?
You know, I don't know. Like I have not personally figured out the answer to everything. I know that's a
no,
shock.
No, I want answers to every single question.
Right? I have not figured out the answer to everything yet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the thing that comes to my mind, obviously, and I'm sure that people hear this all the time, and it's something that it, although maybe not taught by the church, it certainly is taught in church. It's that men have certain responsibilities and that women have certain responsibilities. And one that no matter how much I want to have it, you know, I can never have a baby.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I can be a part of the conception process, hopefully.
Right. Yes.
I can be everything as far as that goes. But no matter how much I want it to be fair, no matter how much I wish or hope that things will change, I'm not ever going to have a baby.
Right.
And I don't think that that's justification to be like, oh, well, then, you know, there can't be fairness in all these other things because women can have a baby. But that, I mean, there, I guess the statement is again, coming back to it, is does everything have to be equal opportunity for everyone in order for it to be fair?
Right. There are really, I think, two or three or four, but definitely two schools of Mormon feminism. And probably the one that is more of like the good girl Mormon feminists would say, well, no, we don't need the priesthood. We can have equality in separate spheres.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of me that very much thinks, like, is attracted to that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, you know, like the early Relief Society was set up in Joseph Smith's words as, you know, I can't remember the exact words and I'll probably mess it up if I say it, but, you know, he said that this is like an order of the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is women's and it's like an internal priesthood for, and those were the words he used. Like, he used the word priesthood when referring to the Relief Society, and he used, you know, words like, shoot, now I have lost my words.
Yes.
but he used words that are very traditionally used to talk about male responsibilities, and he applied them to the priesthood. And those, you know, that aspect of the Relief Society has been lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that idea of Relief Society sort of as a women's balance to the male priesthood has been lost over the years. And there really isn't that sense, I think, among women or among men that is true. But
maybe not that sense, but I certainly think that responsibility, I mean, in observation as far as I notice, I mean, it may be cliche to be said, but, you know, oftentimes I'm heard if you want, you know, or I'm told if you want something done, it's the Relief Society that's going to get it done, whether it's that they do it themselves or that they go, all right, men, how about we do this now?
Right. And that's very much like, that's very much a part of the reality of Mormonism. But then when you come to it, you have these two different ideas of hard power and soft power.
Uh-huh.
And men have hard power and women have soft power. So we can only influence what happens by influencing. So we have to be nice. Mm. And we have to say it in a way that doesn't offend you.
Sure.
And we have to ask you very sweetly. And we can't be confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to come to you and present it and say, is it okay if we do this? And when it works, it works. It works.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the majority of times it works. In healthy wards, it works. And there
sure.
are all kinds of healthy wards out there. And women get all kinds of stuff done. And they have men that support them. And all they have to do is present it. And the men say, yes, that's a great idea. But then when you have an unhealthy ward and you have a, you know, micromanager bishop who, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Then it doesn't
sure.
work. Then the soft power, like once you, you know, soft power is soft because there's nothing you can do. If he says no, then you're out of luck. And no matter how important it is or how strongly you've been guided to the Spirit to do it,
mm-hmm.
you're still not able to because this
hard power lies with the men.
Right. And so it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find that, you know, that model fairly attractive on one level.
Mm-hmm.
And so sort of, I guess the bad girl Mormon feminists would say, no, you know, like it needs to be really equal because, you know, separate but equal has been proven time and again not to work.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is that hard power, soft power problem. You know, it works if you have men who are truly, you know, interested in women and who, and, you know, sometimes it's not even that the men are bad. It's just that men don't think about women the way that women think about men. They mm-hmm. just don't.
How do you mean?
Well, for most of history, men have been the ones with the hard power.
Mm-hmm.
And so we as women, I personally am dependent upon my husband. Like, he pays for my food and my home and my car. And like, I, while he would never tell me what to do, he would never. Like, it's just not something he would do. Well, it's not just that he knows better. It's just completely against his moral code and mm-hmm. the man he is. It wouldn't occur to him to tell me what to do. It
mm-hmm.
just wouldn't. And so but still we women have to be keyed into your needs
mm-hmm.
in a way that you just don't have to be keyed into ours because your survival does not depend on us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like my survival, and this has been key throughout history, and that's why women are so in tune with what men need and want, and it seems like, oh, well, she knows everything and she's always right. It's because we have to work really hard at that, and you don't.
Hmm.
And that's how it is in the church. There is this whole, like, men, it's not that you're bad. It's not that you don't care. It's just that there are so many levels on which you don't see us and what we need.
Awareness.
Right.
Okay.
Right. You just don't see what we need and what needs to happen. And it is, and you know, until that power is truly shared, you know, we won't have what we truly need. We won't have those things. And, you know, there's small things like, you know, bigger rooms for changing diapers in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are bigger things like, you know, church buildings are set up with basketball courts so that men can play basketball,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Sure. Women play basketball too.
Women do play basketball, but if basketball was only a woman's sport, all of the church buildings in the United States would not have basketball courts.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's probably a fair assessment.
Yeah.
But something that, like you pointed out, not something I had ever thought of as far as that goes.
Right. And it's not that there's anything wrong with basketball courts.
No.
I have nothing against basketball courts. But there are a lot of needs that women have that aren't met in our church buildings. Like an office building for primary presidents. Like, do you know how useful that would be for a primary president or a Relief Society president to have an office at the church where they could take care of church business? Hmm. But it's not even provided, and it's not even thought of, and it's not even considered. And so women hold all of their meetings in their homes, which creates, and young women's presidents store all of their supplies in their garage. And, you know, like, it's just not set up to facilitate women's needs.
What other kind of things? This is pretty interesting. And all things that I've never thought of before. So what other kind of things? Enlighten me. I'm loving it. I'm taking mental notes. If I've worn them out, that's fine. We can move on to something else. But I'm curious as to
Well,
other
now that you put me on the spot, my mind just went blank.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a million things in my head.
All the ladies listening, come on, Lisa.
Bring up whatever that thing is that just left my mind.
So let me ask you this then. When you were talking about your daughter talking about passing the sacrament and something, you said, you know, that it's because we're part of an old church with old beliefs, and that it's something that in order for it to change, to be equal. So is your belief or is your desire or is the cure, I guess, to everything that women get the priesthood and have the same rank and file and ability as far as the priesthood goes as men?
You know, I don't know that I have entirely figured that out. A part of me really subscribes to the idea that women have the priesthood. You know, there's that whole debate that goes on.
Sure.
That, you know, that when you go to the temple, certain keys are given and certain things are said. And, you know, obviously it's in conjunction with our husbands or, you know, and it's definitely not, you know, the keys to use it externally. I mean, there's definitely limitations on.
Sure.
But, you know, a part of me subscribes to, you know, the idea that, you know, it's the language in the temple is pretty strong in that respect. I mean, it seems, and I don't know. I don't know. You know, a part of me wonders if the best solution would be to go back to the pre-correlation Relief Society that was independent from men.
Mm-hmm.
But then a part of me wonders, I just don't know. Like, a part of me wonders if, you know, separating the sexes and having separate spheres is the healthiest thing to do. Because I think sometimes that can be unhealthy in and of itself.
Sure.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't decided. I don't know. I wish I knew the answer. If I knew the answer, then I would, of course, go to the prophet and tell him.
Look, I got the answer.
I've got the answer. And I don't have it. I just know that it's broken now. And I'm not, while I love the church and while I feel like it is my spiritual home, and, you know, while I have a really strong testimony in the gospel as I view it, maybe not perhaps as, you know, some people do, but
sure.
I can still acknowledge that the way it is now is not fair and the way it is now is not okay. And that while I don't know how to fix it exactly or what the best way to do that would be, I do have to acknowledge and speak my own truth about where it is now. I wish I had.
Let me take a conservative point of view and say, well, if it were broken, wouldn't the prophet, who is the living and breathing mouthpiece of the church, then be inspired to fix it? Or do you feel like the prophet is at this point being led and it's just a matter of time? A lot of people, we've talked a lot here on the Cultural Hall about gay marriage and the idea and the treatment towards gay marriage. And even within the last couple of years, between Prop 8 and today, the way that the church, although still very much in opposition towards, you know, gay marriage, is not nearly as much as this is bad and you are terrible. It's, you know, they very much have embraced the, you know what, we love you, we, you know, be a part of us and everything like that. Do you feel like it's something that the prophet would first of all need or would be inspired to work on, to be kind of pushing towards it? Or how, because I guess what I'm saying is, for me, it would be hard if I felt like the church which I belong to was flawed in a way. To say that I think that it's perfect. I think that there are definitely things that, you know, could be better, but genuinely flawed. It would be hard for me and my faith to be like, yep, I'm going, here's 10%, and I'm going to do this calling where I don't get paid for, and I'm going to go and do those things. How do you kind of, you know, come to terms with that?
I definitely, it isn't always easy. It is sometimes hard, you know, like it absolutely is. But you just have to weigh in your life what matters most to you. And I think as far as like the prophets have never claimed to be perfect.
Sure.
They have never claimed to know everything or that their every act or every word is, you know.
In fact, you know, to point out, going on the other side, they certainly have claimed several times that they're not perfect. And
exactly.
That they are men who are, you know, able to make mistakes.
And I, you know, in my own experience with Mormon men, like my father, who was the best man in the world, he loved me with all of his heart, and he wanted only the best for me. And it never occurred to him to question patriarchy. Never occurred to him for one second. Mm-hmm. And it had nothing to do with how much he valued me as a woman. It had nothing to do, you know, he was very much a part of his generation, and it wasn't something that ever entered his mind in a way that he could process. And that's okay, because I'm sure that, you know, 100 years from now, I will have things that my great-grandchildren would be horrified that I never figured out and processed, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's okay mm-hmm. that is part of who they are. And the prophet is very much of my father's generation. And so, you know, I can think that he's a wonderful man and that he's inspired by God and that he is the, you know, the leader of the church. And I can still think that it just is not something that is on his radar, mm-hmm. that it's not something that he's truly, you know, that he has truly figured out, because obviously if he figured it out, he'd know that I'm right.
Yeah.
No, just
that's
kidding.
Lisa, but no,
that's a joke. That's a joke. We're clarifying that. You know, and so thinking about David O. McKay uh-huh. and the pain that he went through, because I think that he truly was in his heart against the ban of blacks in the priesthood. If you
sure.
read his writings and if you read his thoughts on it, I don't think he was a fan. And yet, even as a prophet, he didn't feel like he had the right to overturn that.
Mm-hmm.
And so who knows what is in President Monson's heart and what he's thinking. You know, I don't know. I have no idea if he's asked or if he hasn't asked or if it's on his radar or if it's not on his radar. But I just don't think that your ability to see sexism or not see sexism and to what degree necessarily qualifies you or doesn't qualify you to be a man of God.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. So I'm a young feminist, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's really shaking my faith.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking around and I see this, and it's like, oh, the men in this church, and oh, it's the men in the church this. What advice would you give to me as far as, you know, to stay true? You say it's tough, but I get the impression based on what you've said that even through some really tough times, you've still said, you know what, I know that the church is true. I'm on board. Let's do this. So what kind of words of advice would you give to someone that is really struggling with, you know, discovering their feminism, but also recognizing that their Mormonism may not contradict, but have some kind of rough spots with it?
Well,
what are we doing right? Maybe
I would think, be a good, oh, okay. So you want to know what the church is doing right?
Well, I think what the church is doing right, but
I
then
think
also
a,
what you would say too.
Like on a personal level, I think that, you know, I would say that you really have to follow your own light. Mm-hmm. You have to listen to the Holy Ghost. You have to, however you define that best inner self or that light of God or that divine nature, you know, you have to find that and you have to listen to it. And that is not going to lead everybody into the same place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that my path is the path everybody should walk. So, because I have been given a lot of advantages. I've never been abused by the patriarchy. I've never been, you know, like I've never, like there are a lot of things that advantages I've had in my life that has made this path for me possible and palpable. And I've had a lot of experiences that I would call spiritual experiences that have confirmed that this is where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that other people will have those experiences. And I know very specifically that there are a lot of people that would love to have experiences that told them to stay and they don't get those,
mm-hmm.
You know, because that's all they want. You know, they just want to be good Mormon girls and they want the spirit to speak to them and tell them to stay and it doesn't. And I went through that. I went through a dark night of the soul that lasted for almost a decade. So I know.
How did you get out?
Well, God spoke to me, you know, I just had decided that maybe I was an atheist or an agnostic because I hadn't heard from God in 10 years. Well, maybe 9, 8, something. And I was going to say so out loud and I had a stupor of thought and then I got filled with the Holy Spirit. And I don't know how else to say that mm-hmm. other than that I felt loved and I heard a voice that said, I'm here, you know, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. You know, I am here. And I didn't turn off the logical part of my brain because the logical part of my brain immediately kicked in and said, you know what, this, you really wanted this for a long time. You're just making this happen because you want it so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to go through that whole logical thing and say, well, maybe, but also I've been asking for this for a long time. And if I just discount it now, that's really ungrateful. Like
sure.
If I've been asking for this for 10 years and I finally get it and then I just talk myself out of it and that didn't maintain either. It isn't like I have one of those every day.
Sure.
You know, like, no, that does not happen for me. I do have spiritual experiences, but ironically, most of them have come from places that are not completely orthodox. You know, like most of my experiences with the divine have come from this really unexpected place because I have, you know, like I never really identified with Heavenly Mother.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really on my radar. And I knew it was a strong influence for a lot of Mormon feminists. I knew it was very, you know, like a very powerful thing, but I didn't identify with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just didn't seem important to me. And in the last few years, like there's just been this synchronicity of events where time and time again, I have felt what I feel honestly was Heavenly Mother's presence. And I don't know any other way to explain that other than, and I don't know. You know, nobody can know. It's all inside me. It's in my brain.
Sure.
It's in my feelings. It's who knows what it is, but it feels good and it feels right. And it feels like it's something I should listen to.
Sure.
And so, but that isn't the path that everybody gets. That isn't, you know, what everybody receives. And so as far as like on a personal level, I think you have to just give yourself time, you know, give yourself time to get through the anger, give yourself time to get through, you know, you don't have to like decide that the church has all of these problems and so therefore you can't be a part of it and you're going to resign your membership like tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can give yourself a decade to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You can give yourself a break from church if you need to, and you can still come back later if you feel like that's what you need to do. Like you just need to listen to the spirit, to your own spirit, to your divine nature. And you know, and I'm still getting to the point because I feel like the church is a lot of contradictions. You know, like when you say, you know, when you were talking earlier about that, seems like it's a contradiction, whatever we were
mm-hmm,
talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that we are a church that is inherently full of those contradictions because we have a very strong belief in personal revelation. And we have a very strong belief in obedience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still really figuring out that obedience thing because I do think that we need balance in things. You know, like you know, we do need to balance those, and those two things knock up against each other really hardcore in our, you know, values. And the church for the last 10, 20 years has been heavy on the obedience. You know, we've been pounding that in.
Sure.
And right now, obviously, I'm embracing more of the personal revelation side of things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I probably do need to draw back in some of that obedience stuff and figure it out in my own mind, but I haven't really figured that out yet. But I do think that there is a place where that balances out. And that's, you know, my own personal journey that I'm figuring out. But and in life, everything has those contradictions, and the church is absolutely full of those kinds of contradictions, mm-hmm. where they seem to be two things that we teach that seem completely diametrically opposed to each other. And I think that the truth lies somewhere in the middle of all that stuff that makes no sense. It doesn't lie with complete obedience, and it doesn't lie with complete, you know, following your own. But I think, you know, if you've been hearing the gospel of obedience for so long and you've been so deep into that that you don't know how to listen to yourself, I think you have to learn how to do that before you can come back in and figure out how to bring the obedience back into that. Mm-hmm. formula. And so, you know, like, that isn't something I have figured out entirely, but I think there are, as far as like signs, what is the church doing right? Mm-hmm. You want to go there?
Let's do it.
You know,
nothing. Oh, no.
No. I just need to form my opinions. Right. Well, a lot of things are a little bit hard to put into words, but there has just been a general sort of softening in the church, mm-hmm. towards, although, you know, it swings a little bit, it's a pendulum, towards, you know, intellectuals and feminists and gays, as you've said. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't hear a lot of that rhetoric anymore. You know, a lot of the things like the Relief Society, the early Relief Society letters were once, you know, 20 years ago when the Relief Society celebrated its birthday, the quotes about the priesthood and Relief Society being analogous were removed from, you know, like the displays in the museum, the church museum. Like, those things were taken down. And so, like, it was, you know, some of that history of women's independence was sort of whitewashed. And those documents are now available, like, in their full form, complete on the internet. Mm-hmm. So you can go in and you can read that stuff, and it's fascinating. It is fascinating, and it is free and open to the public. Like, you can go read whatever you want about what Joseph Smith said about women, you know, exercising our, you know. And so obviously, you know, like, the church is just becoming more open to, you know, acknowledging our history a little bit, you know, baby steps. And, you know, I know that a lot of the, you know, a rhetoric about, I mean, there have been, all of the birth control rhetoric that my mother grew up with is gone, mm-hmm. you know. A lot of the just little changes that happen over time have been good for women. A lot of the condemnation of working mothers has, I mean, it comes up every once in a while, but it was pounded into us, you know,
sure.
a couple decades ago.
Do not
ago.
Work. It's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And now, you know, the reality, they're starting to acknowledge the reality that mothers have to work, and even maybe that mothers need to work for their own
sanity.
And so,
and self-worth, certainly.
Right. Sanity, self-worth, and, you know, security, because not every husband is going to always be there for you. And so just a lot of those things, I think, are starting to shift. There, I mean, it doesn't take any sort of imagination to look for discouraging things, mm-hmm. but the encouraging things are there as well. I mean, they revamped the Young Women's Personal Progress a couple years ago, and there were lots of little areas that were improved over the previous program, and I know that they're revamping the manuals again, mm-hmm. the actual manuals that are taught out of, because those suckers are a mess. And
tell me how you really feel.
they were written in the 70s, and
it's a different time.
Goodness, that stuff should not be taught, most of it. And actually, the truth is that young women are being, you know, like, the young women's leaders are saying pretty much flat out, use the supplemental materials available online, you know, mm-hmm. because those materials are far better than this manual that we were handing you right now, because...
Well, and it's a different time. I think that is not just necessarily to mention about feminism. 40 years ago was a different time than it is today.
It was. And a lot of the things that are a problem with that manual are things that we just did not understand. I mean, like, for instance, you know, there are stories in there where basically girls are date raped and then they've lost their chastity and have to go to the bishop to repent. And, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, but there was not a real understanding of what date rape was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like the, you know, teaching that sort of thing to young women today is absolutely irresponsible and wrong.
Sure.
And further, we've become much more aware about abuse and, you know, the ways that we set women up to be abused and young women and like those things really need to be addressed. And they have been a little bit, you know, there have been it's starting to be acknowledged that women can be abused, that girls can be abused, mm-hmm. and that this is a problem. And, you know, like those being acknowledged is the first step, and actually like teaching young women how to be empowered and how not to be victims and how to listen to their, you know, own personal revelation and not, you know, to be obedient in situations that they don't feel right about. You know, like those kinds of things are things that are starting to come out. But, you know, they just haven't been encoded in our manuals yet. Mm-hmm. But you can see the signs of them, you know, if you pay attention. So, you know, there are lots of little hopeful signs, and they are little. And, you know, it's, you can sometimes feel like you need to beat your head against a wall because it's so slow. But it's part of the process of bureaucracy. And the church is just a huge bureaucracy. And it's, and, you know, that's okay. That's, it's a human institution. I mean, if you take the that, you know, God inspired every word in every manual, then you're never going to be happy. You know, either right. you're going to be completely blind or you're never going to be happy. You know, like, I don't know.
Let me ask you this, because we got to wrap it up pretty quick. But I want to ask you, we ask every guest three questions. One, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I am the ward humanitarian.
Which does?
I arrange humanitarian activities for the ward. So like people come to me and say, we need to do a service project or whatever. And I give them ideas, or like I work with the Relief Society and we come up with projects to do mm-hmm. as a ward or as a Relief Society, or, you know, like we can, I work with all different kinds of groups and just sort of make sure we're doing good deeds.
Cool. If you could pick a calling, what calling would you have?
This is going to sound completely insane, but I would love to do girls camp.
Really?
Yeah.
Be the camp director?
I would love that. I love camping and I love teenage girls. And, you know, I just think that would be really fun. I could be wrong and it might be really horrible. And I've just never done it, so I have no idea. But in my mind, that would be my ideal calling. Because, you know, like being a young women's leader is a lot of year-round effort and sure. a lot of high stress and a lot of like... Girls camp is just fun. You just go and do it and camp and get dirty. And yeah, I would like to do girls camp.
What is your favorite part of your faith?
But I love my faith so much. I think my favorite Mormon doctrine is eternal progression. I love that. I find a lot of the sort of standard Christian ideas of heaven kind of boring when I've been raised as a, you know, like you're going to be learning for eternity. But then I'm also been someone who likes to learn stuff and have you know, felt comfortable with that idea. So yeah, eternal progression. I'm a fan.
And then finally we ask people to climb up on the Rammy Umptum and tell mm-hmm. people where they can find you, Facebook or Twitter or website, all that stuff. So lay it out where people can get in touch with you if they wanted to.
Well, obviously feministmormonhousewives.org, O-R-G, or just Google feminist Mormons or feminist housewives or Mormon housewives. Any of those will get you there. And then if you're into Facebook, we do have a Facebook group. It's Feminist Mormon Housewife Society. And it is very, very busy. But if you like, you know, to discuss all the little sexist memes that your ward members put up, and there's a lot of that going on. And it's a very respectful group, but it's very, very, very busy. I can barely keep on top of it. So... the blog is a little more digestible, I think. But if you've got a lot of mind vomit that you need to get rid of sometimes, you can find somebody to work that through with on Facebook. So, so come to the blog, or you can join the Facebook group. There's two choices right there.
Perfect. It's Lisa Butterworth with feministmormonhousewives.org. Thank you so much for being here in my kitchen with me.
You're welcome.
We hope that this podcast will nourish and strengthen your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen to this podcast this week, that you'll be able to listen to the podcast next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety.
Right.
And in the meantime...
And also moisture.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and we've been praying for moisture.
Right.
In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be